Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs and have some fun.
You gotta give us a shot.
You know what?
You gotta give us a shot.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Clapback Sports. I am your host, The Mage. I'm joined by my co-host. Let's start with you, CG. How you doing today?
Doing good. How you doing? How you guys doing today?
Not too bad, man. Kind of hanging in there. I'm still a little exhausted off of the draft weekend, but it was certainly exciting for a lot of Giants fans. But there was news today that Murph is itching to get to. But before we do, how you doing, Murph? How's everything?
Good, man. Just ready for playoff hockey tomorrow. Me and CJ were talking about that before we started, but ready for the Rangers. And, flurry of NFL moves going on right now.
This is the second week in a row you started with hockey.
Well, yeah, because, like, the Rangers are what's going on.
We don't have a hockey audience. No one cares.
It doesn't matter.
No one gives a shit about the Rangers, Murph.
It doesn't matter. No one cares about the Mets.
We care about the Rangers. I like the Rangers.
Yeah, see?
You know, two to one. Right,
I'm just going to mute myself, and you guys could just have a conversation about the Rangers and hockey. And, what is it? Shesterkin!
Shesterkin.
Let's go, Rangers. That's all I'll say.
Murph, let's start off with the news that you want to get to. Go ahead. I mean, I'll leave it up to you, man.
Chris Pettitte fired. Kyle O'Brien, not surprising. I mean, wasn't he really only here for 2 years?
That was just a regime change.
Right.
That's it.
But, you know, you asked what we want to start off with. And so does this mean that the rest of the staff goes? Like, how does that work? He was the director of scouting. So – do his staffs go now? No, like, is it a whole new office coming into the building here? Or is it just Chris Pettitte and Mo Brian are leaving? Because I know that, you know, previously on the show with Tino, we had talked about how many scouts have been here for 7, 10, 12, 15, 17 years. And that's where, you know, I'm interested in what's next. So I would guess wholesale changes, no?
I don't know. I really don't know where we go from here. So I don't know. I mean, because everybody under that is probably, what, regional area scouts? So, right. I mean, are you turning over the entire staff and hiring new people? I don't know if the Giants can necessarily afford to do that.
CG?
I think, you know, honestly, this is kind of in my mind, I think this is more of a retroactive move, meaning which when Shane came in here, I think these guys already knew that their days were numbered. I've seen this with other teams. And, you know, looking at Chris Pettitte, I mean, he's been around with the Giants since 05. You know, he was part of those two Super Bowl runs. But I personally think this is good for the Giants because it's part of the moving away from the Gettleman and the Reese, and even before that, you know, going way back, you know, prior to that, to like the Mark Ross type of ideas that they had. So, you know, looking at this, it's not a surprise to me. I kind of figured they were going in this direction. I guess my hope is that Pettitte didn't have too much say in who the Giants just drafted this past weekend.
Well, back to Murph's question, I mean, what does that mean for the staff under Chris Pettitte, then, in your opinion?
I think, you know, I remember when Shane was hired, there was a little bit of reshuffling. If you remember, Kevin Abrams took a demotion. I think he was focusing more on cap duties because that's one of his specialties. I think there's going to be more transition. I think a lot more people on the lower levels who have not been fired yet are probably going to be relieved of their duties. I would guess who I'd say right now, just stay tuned. I think this is a normal process as, you know, Shane moves to have complete control over the entire, you know, operation. And, you know, this was coming.
It's interesting because you know, there's all that information out there about Charles Cross being top 10 pick and, you know, the Giants not being interested in Fibs and all this and that. I mean, you got to wonder if he was the rat, you know, leaving all that smoke.
I heard some rumors on Twitter that were talking about him and Pat Leonard having some sort of back channel where there's rumors, and this is allegedly, that talk about Chris Pettit here, that he was texting Pat Leonard and leaking specific information. Now, take that for what it is. It's not official, you know, this is exactly what happened, but that's the rumors that I've been hearing.
It's just wild that Todd McShay on ESPN, you know, Mr. Draft Guy, was told that Thibs wasn't even on our board. Like, when we picked Thibs, man,
Even Forbes last week, when we were talking to Chad Forbes, I mean, he seemed like the Giants were not even going to even entertain the thought of drafting Thibodeau. And we saw how that turned out. And I'm sure we'll talk much more about it later on tonight. But interesting news, you know, it's not interesting. You know, I figured, and this is something else we may want to talk about in a little bit, is that the Giants are probably going to start making some cuts, you know, some of these veteran players, because you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, they need to cut back some salary. And since they weren't unable to trade James Bradbury, you know, those cuts are coming.
Meiji? Wakey?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, man. I want you to tell us how we're going to fix this cap for this draft class.
Oh, well, you're in on how I felt about it before this. I didn't think that Bradbury was going.
I don't know.
Joe Shane never operated with any sense of emergency when it came to moving James Bradbury. And you talked about this ad nauseum, how much you hated the fact that he cut Logan Ryan, got nothing in return for him, and ate a whole bunch of dead cap money. So you're telling me a guy that's willing to do that, eat a lot of dead cap money for only less than $1 million in savings, 990 grand. You're telling me that he was less calculated with a bigger piece in James Bradbury? I think not. I think he wanted a third rounder for James Bradbury. The market just wasn't there for him, and he was okay with keeping him. Dave Gettleman said it last year. Not going to get fleeced.
Well, I did do a tweet on Saturday about this because I was curious to see where the Giants could get a little extra money. And I looked at Over the Cap, you know, the website where you can kind of calculate by cutting certain players how much space you could free up. So based on my estimation, there is an easy $20 million they could cut. I mean, obviously, Bradbury is about $10.1 million. Got Gates at 2.1, Love at 2.5, Slayton at 2.5. And then O'Shane Zimenez, Wes Martin, Harris, and CJ Board, another about $1 million each. So you total that all up, that's about $20 million. So there are options for the Giants to cut salary, but we just haven't seen them yet. That might be something that we'll see in the next couple of days.
I'm assuming all those salaries, that's part of the top 51, right?
Yeah, that's all pre-June 1st if they cut them June 1st. And I'm not even talking about if they wait until after June 1st.
It's guys like Gates and...
Well, the Giants can still use post-June 1st designations for these guys too. They haven't used any. I was surprised they didn't use it on Logan Ryan as a post-June 1 cut. Been in it. I don't know why, but... I guess he just doesn't want to push any of that dead money forward into 2023. So it kind of is what it is. But personally, I mean, I don't know. I see James Bradbury being here.
I don't see how you could get rid of him now. I mean, quite honestly, after the draft we just saw, and we'll definitely talk a little bit more about that, I don't see how you can go into next season without having both Bradbury and Dory Jackson on this team. It just... For me, it would be really a malpractice unless they have a better idea.
Murph and I talked about this a little bit earlier today. I mean, right? Like, you add Kayvon Thibodeau, you add Kayvon Thibodeau to a nice defensive front. So you now got Kayvon Thibodeau, you got Azeez Ojulari, you got Ellison Smith, you got Quincy Roche, you got Raymond Johnson, you got Dexter Lawrence, Leonard Williams, you got Justin Ellis that they brought in. I mean, this is a pretty solid defensive front. And, the one thing I like about it, too, is that they got bodies, man. So you're talking about they could end up rotating a lot of these guys in and out to keep them fresh. And if that would do wonders for a team. So you got the help up front now, seemingly, to get the pressure on the quarterback. Why the fuck in the world would you just get rid of Bradbury now and then stick a second-year player like Aaron Robinson into a starting role, or even a guy like Darnay Holmes, who played outside in college at UCLA, but he's probably better suited for as a slot receiver in the NFL. And then they went and drafted Cordell Flatt this weekend. I'm not sure where he's projected to go, but he looks like he's going to be a slot corner as well. I mean, so again, who's starting outside for the New York Giants then, man?
And we know this too, okay? We know how last season went with the Giants boiling point Twitter. We're going into a season where Daniel Jones needs to have a hot start. The Giants need to start out 2-0, 3-0. And if you know there's going to be an adjustment phase for the defense adjusting to this Wink Martindale scheme. We're not talking about Patrick Graham anymore, who had this bend but no break defense. We're talking about all-out blitzes where there's heavy man-to-man coverage on the outside, you know? And my worry is if they trade James Bradbury, then you're going to be relying on Aaron Robinson, Cordell Flott, whomever else, to walk in there and play at a high level starting out on the season. And then God forbid the Giants lose a game, let's say 35-15 or 35-20, you know, the pitchforks are going to be marching right down Route 3. So that's how I see it.
No, I mean, I'm totally with you on, and just looking at the cap, you can make cap space other ways. And it's going to involve, obviously, redoing James Bradbury in some way. But, like, are we just going to, like, wave the white flag and not be competitive? Like, this is a passing league. And honestly, like, this is a fan base that 1 week ago we were just talking about getting Sauce Gardner and Derek Stingley in the first round. So it's kind of like, dude, like, Wink wants DBs. Like, there's no denying that. And I was actually talking to some Ravens fans last week on Twitter, and I think I mentioned this last week, but like they want Bradbury, and they actually thought he could have fit in to Wink's scheme as well, because Marcus Peters kind of played that role where he played a little bit of his own corner while Humphreys went up against the line of scrimmage and played man press real heavy. So, I mean, I don't understand kicking good talent off your roster when, in my opinion, like, and again, like, maybe being a delusional Giants fan, but the division's down. It's not a good division. I don't care what anyone says. We do have a chance to win it. It is what
I want to stop you there for 1 second, because the biggest pet peeve that I have is anybody that says that we're not going to win football games this year, as if there's just going to be a lack of effort on everybody's part. Like, oh, you know what? We're not going to be good this year. Like, that's bullshit. You try and tell a person that's played football, or try to tell one of these professional athletes that you're not going to go out there and try to win games. First of all, what precedent are you setting as a new regime, new organization, new coaching staff, if that was your message? Two, I'll tell you what, no fucking front office, no organization is wasting years on players purposely. This is Andrew Thomas's third season, right? Yeah, this is going to be Andrew Thomas's third season. You think they're just going to waste one of his rookie years, knowing that they have 5 years with the fifth year option? No, they're going to go out there and they're going to try to compete. And Joe Shane has said this: they're going to try to compete while building a better roster, and it makes no sense for anybody to just start chalking up seasons as if it's not going to be good. I mean, that's fine. Yeah, whatever. You want to call me delusional, you want to call me a homer, you want to call me a shill, it's fine. We can have a conversation about what the Giants' record might be this year. But it's fucking May and we're talking about them already. Like, it just makes no fucking sense.
We have a crazy fan base, all right? I see it on Twitter every day. People are lunatics. They get upset over the littlest of things. I mean, God forbid the Giants are down 7-0 week one sometime early in September. People are going to be jumping off the Verrazano Bridge. I mean, this is for this fan base needs to take a step back and chill. The Giants are a team that's on the way up. They're ascending. Based on the other teams in the division, I agree with you, Murph. I look at what the Philadelphia Eagles did. I actually like what they did. But you look at the Washington Commanders, you look at the Dallas Cowboys, they did nothing. Dallas is a weaker team. Dallas is not on the ascent, you know. The Washington Commanders haven't won a Super Bowl since early 1990s. Neither have the Cowboys. Cowboys haven't won since 1995. So, you know, as a Giants fan, as a fan base, we should be sitting here and being in a better mood. Because you know what? As much as it sucked for Daniel Jones to get injured last season, his injury led to us getting two top flight players, Evan Neal and Kayvon Thibodeau. You know, we wouldn't have got those players if he didn't get injured. So, yeah, this fan base needs to take a step back and relax because we are on the way up. And that's my opinion.
Well, here's the other thing.
Fucking cool.
Murph, and I'm going to steal your point here for a second, and I'll let you talk on it. But Murph said this. But you're going to get rid of James Bradbury, right, to start who, seemingly? Aaron Robinson, Darnay Holmes, Flop, one of these guys. When opposite of James Bradbury, you have Adoree Jackson, who hasn't shown the ability to stay healthy as well. And that was a point that Murph brought up. So good, Murph.
I mean, you just need bodies in this league, man. It's a passing league. And I mean, again, we were just talking about how Wink wants his corners last week. So I get it. He might not be like Wink's ideal fit, but like James Bradbury is a good football player. So if you can figure out how to keep him on this roster, you do. I don't buy all this shit that their relationship's broken, yada, yada, yada. I don't buy any of that. So, I mean, a good GM will get that done. But, I mean, keep him on the roster and flip back the deadline, man. Like, they can make some cash some other ways, and I think they will. I think if they wanted Bradbury off the roster, they would have cut him a long time ago because that would have given him the cap savings to do more things early on, right? Like, you know, I don't get that. So, but I mean, I think that's enough about that. But how about damn draft picks, man? Come on, Thibodeau. Again, like after everything we just talked about, I never thought the Giants would take him. And I'm so happy. I'm so happy. I don't know about y'all.
Well, Frank hates when I do this, but I told you. I told you. I even went on Big Blue in the Bronx, and I stayed on Big Blue in the Bronx. I was sticking with my board. I only did one mock draft. I had 8 players correct in the top 10. Might not have been in the same order, but I still corrected. I still predicted 8 of the top 10 players. But yeah, man, I had Kayvon Thibodeau going to the New York Giants at 5, Evan Neal going to the New York Giants at 7, and Charles Cross going to the Seahawks at 9. So I was pretty happy with the way that landed out. But there was that doubt in my mind, like, God, please don't pass on him. Please don't pass on him. Please don't pass on him. And we actually selected him. By the way, and I'm going to give credit where credit's due. You know what made the situation even more hyped? Sam Prince, man.
God bless. He's an animal.
God bless that kid. I mean, he was fucking hyped as hell for the pick. He got Kayvon hyped for the pick. Everybody was hyped for the pick. We all loved it, man, as Giants fans. But what's your thoughts on the draft weekend, CJ?
Okay. I was trying to think of the best way I could relate this. I was trying to relate it to going on 3 dates with a chick. Okay. First night was unbelievable. Like everything went right. Can't complain. Second night you go back to her apartment and it's like loaded with cats and, you know, romance novels. You're like, oh my God, this is horrible. And then the third night you're just like, okay, I got a 6-pack of beer and I'm going home. So, you know, that for me, you know, it was a great first night, a very disappointing second night. And the third night was pretty good.
Well, here's the thing, right? And I'll use your date analogy. First night, you go out, you're with the pretty woman, you score, right? You end up getting some on the first night. Then you go back a second night, and all she wants to do is sit on the couch and watch movies. And then the third night, you go over, and she just wants to hold hands. That's it, right? What happened at pitch 5 and 7? Was this fan base ejaculated before we even got to third base? So Kayvon Thibodeau and Evan Neal, it didn't matter what the New York Giants did after that. It didn't. Kayvon Thibodeau and Evan Neal was the home run that we were looking for out of this fan base. And I'm sorry. You know what? Murph knows, because I said it a lot on our podcast. Fuck what the rankings are after combines and after these visits and after the Senior Bowl. Go back to what the rankings were prior to all this. Kayvon Thibodeau at many points was projected to be the first overall pick. Evan Neal was projected to be third or fourth in this draft. The Giants got both of them at 5 and 7. So look, I could not be more pleased with this draft. Ike Mukwunu ended up going to the Panthers, who I believe I also had selecting there as well. And, you know, it's just I also had a conversation with somebody else that said, you know, what was the philosophy there? Well, you know what? If I have two offensive tackles rated pretty closely, I'm going with the player that's not going to be available. So Giants took Kayvon Thibodeau. The Panthers took Ike Mukwunu. Giants selected Neal. Honestly, I don't think it could have worked out any better for us.
No, not at all. And, you know, I think the best thing that could have happened was that both Stingley and Sauce Gardner went off the board. Because for me, my dream draft was
It started even before that. Trayvon Walker at 1. I mean,
that's Looney Tunes, you know?
Holy shit. Thank you, Jacksonville.
I mean, I'm sure that Doug Peterson was pulling his hair out with that pick, because I don't think he wanted him. I think that was totally the GM there. And, you know, as I saw the picks coming in, I said, man, this might actually happen. And when Thibodeau was sitting there at 5, and then I go back to last week when we were talking to Chad Forbes, I was praying to God. I was like, don't screw this up. There's no way in God hell you could screw this up. Draft Thibodeau, and then maybe pray that Carolina doesn't take Neal. And lo and behold, you know, you look at Kayvon Thibodeau. I mean, like you said, he was the consensus number one pick if you go back to the end of last year. The guy is basically, in my mind, a raw Myles Garrett. You know, 83.9 PFF grade last season, 9 sacks, 10 tackles for loss. The guy was all over the field. And then you go to Evan Neal. Evan Neal is probably the most polished player, and plus he played right tackle most of the time in Alabama, and he's another PFF guy, another 84.5 average. The last 2 years, he averaged about 84. So, you know, you're bringing in a monster on the right side to protect Daniel Jones. You're bringing in a monster who's probably, the last time we had someone like that on the defensive line is maybe JPP, maybe even Michael Strahan. You know, he has that attitude. The question is, will he be as good as Strahan? None of us know that right now. But very pleased with the first two picks. Murph, how did you feel?
Same thing, man. I mean, honestly, I didn't think we were going to get either one of these guys. I told Midge the whole time that Evan Neal was going number one. So for us to be able to get him at 7, I mean, that's obviously a dream come true. And then I thought we were staying away from Tibbs the whole time. Like, honestly, the whole process, I thought we were staying away from him. I didn't think he would slide, and I didn't think that we would just be part of that. And it's a new era here, and I'm so glad. I was so fucking happy when they took him, man. Like, to get two of the most valuable positions in football in the top 10, let's hope Joe hit it, you know? But I'm not going to lie to you guys. Like, I only know 5 of the guys we drafted. I like Wando. I know some people think we kind of reached there.
Before we move on to the Wando pick, right, okay. I just want to come back to Kayvon real quick, too. So I think it turned out apparently the Giants had FaceTimed them, I think, the day before the draft as well.
Before the draft, I think.
On the plane, before he got on the plane, yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, there was certainly interest there, too. And, if there were any concerns with Kayvon Thibodeau, I just want to go on record and say, you know what? I love everything about this fucking guy, man. You know what? I love his energy. I mean, we have, and you said it, CG, we haven't had a guy with this type of energy in forever, right? You could probably go back to Odell, but it wasn't the same type of energy. Like, this guy is just like, he's all about it. Like, I don't know.
He's fucking Iron Man. We haven't had an Iron Man or a Batman in years. I mean, that's the truth.
I fucking love Kayvon Thibodeau, man. I love everything that he's going to bring. And I love that Michael Strahan, right? Yeah, once a giant, always a giant. Michael Strahan's like, yeah, no problem. I'll work with the kid. And, you know, I just love the New York Giants organization, man. Yeah. Honestly, I don't think I can say anything else about that. So, I mean, Murph, if you want to add anything to it, you want to move on to one, though, that's up to you.
Just Kayvon and Ojulari is very exciting. Just judging by what it looks like, kind of work Ojulari's put in the offseason already, he looks fucking jacked.
Yeah, well, so him and Kayvon, Iron Man.
Like, when was the last time we had two ends? Is like CG said, with JPP and Vernon. Like, it's been a while, and that's, at the end of the day, what Giants football has always been about. So I'm fucking stoked about Kayvon.
Well, CG mentioned Iron Man, but did not mention that Aziz looks like the Hulk. So
we got the whole freaking Marvel universe now. We're gonna have a freaking, hopefully, a movie involving us winning a damn Super Bowl, because it's been too long. It's been over 10 years. So,
well, you know what? CG, you haven't been here long enough, but the numbers, right? So the Giants' first two Super Bowl victories were when? 86 and 90, right?
Yep.
How many years in between those?
Well, you went from 86 to 90. That's what, 4 years? And in 90 to 2000, it was 10 years, and that was a horrible Super Bowl. We got embarrassed. And then you go from 2000 to 2007, that's another seven and another four. So we're right on target for another one. So,
well, so 4 years in between 2007 and 2011 too. So it could be 10 years before we see another Super Bowl.
Yeah, we're right about there. We're there. And it has to be, you know, you look at Daniel Jones, he's got to do well if he's going to be the future quarterback. So should be an interesting year.
Murph, so you alluded to it. All right. So I think it's safe to say that we're all excited about the Giants' first two picks. Not a whole lot of analysis to add there, right? Everybody knows who they were. They were popular selections, especially for mock drafts. So move on to the second pick. As, you know, CG had alluded to, this is the moment in which you find out that she lives alone and she's got a bunch of cats. So,
do you want me to start this off? Because I'll tell you right now. So, I love the trade backs. I'll tell you that. When I saw the Giants trade back twice, I was very excited about that. I said, you really can't have enough mid-round picks, especially if you're trying to build your roster. So when the Giants traded back at 36, I was like, okay, this is good. And then when they traded back again to 43, I was like, this is even better, because, you know, we're accumulating these mid-round picks. This is awesome. But that's where it ended for me, because when they went up there and he said that with this 43rd pick, we're selecting Wandell Robinson. I'm like, what the F? Because I'll be honest with you, Wandell Robinson was not on my radar for that pick. You know, he is, in my mind, he's a guy you could have gotten in probably in the fourth or fifth round. He's a Darius Slayton type of pick, I would have said. I'm not saying he's on the same talent level as Darius Slayton, but very surprising that the Giants would have gone there. In my mind, I felt that the Giants were a little bit panicked with that pick, and I received a lot of blowback on Twitter for this, but let's look at this for a second. Okay, Jalen Petrie, Kyler Gordon, and Booth, they were all there when the Giants picked at 36, and the Giants decided to trade back twice. I think in their mind they felt,
well, it came out later after the draft that basically Andrew Booth is not healthy.
Okay. So I was just looking at the players who are on the board, and I said to myself, okay, you know, is this a trade back situation where they have a handful of prospects that they're targeting, and then they run into a Jerry Reese situation where, oh shit, you know, Conklin's off the board. What's the other? I'm trying to remember. It was Floyd. the linebacker from the Bears, you know, back in the 2016 draft where Jerry Reese was panicked and decided to pick Eli Apple. That's what it felt like to me. And I don't want to knock Wandale Robinson. He might turn out to be this great wide receiver for the Giants, and I might be eating my words. But right now, it just, you know, I just felt like the pick was a reach. What do you guys feel?
I mean, there was definitely other wide receivers there at the time that I was like, you know, I knew about Wando because our boy Bren liked him a lot. I knew he was like an electric player. He's like a joystick player. He's different than Tony. Like, Tony's a balanced guy and he's like aggressive. He's big. Like, he plays bigger than his size. Wando's more like he's a route runner, in my opinion. But, you know, there was, you had Sky Moore on the board, I believe. You had Alex Pierce on the board still. Pickens, I think Mechie went right after him as well. So, you know, there's other guys that I knew a lot more about, but, you know, I'm not going to complain about Wandale. He lit the SEC on fire, dude. And that's obviously the best conference in football. And obviously, you know, there's the Jameson Williams and all those kind of guys, but, you know, Wandale played in that same conference. He held his own. He's a lot different than Tony too. That whole notion is different. And Mage pointed that out to me. And they can coexist. But you know what, dude? Like, we need horses. Dabble need horses. And if that's what he wanted, that's what he wanted, man. I'm good.
Well, you know, I mean, to say a positive thing, I mean, he had a 91.3 PFF grade, if you want to go by that. I mean, he had 1,000.
He had 1,300. The highest. I believe he was the highest rated wide receiver.
1,300 yards. Yep, 1,300 yards, more than 1,300 yards. 12.9 yards a catch, 7 touchdowns. I mean, yeah. The Giants obviously want someone who's going to fill that Cole Beasley, Isaiah McKenzie role. And I think he's probably going to be utilized, obviously, from the slot. And I think he's going to be, if he's utilized correctly, I think he could be a real weapon. But I just felt at the moment it was a little bit of a head-scratcher move.
So let's talk about it, right? So at 36, because you mentioned some of the players that the Giants pass on. So Giants had already decided to trade down from 36 to 38. So Jets come up, they get Breece Hall. Jalen Petrie goes right after that at 37, right? Then on the board, the Giants have a shot at some of these cornerbacks that you mentioned, Kyler Gordon, Andrew Booth. Ebikidi was still there, Boye Mafe. So but Giants decide to trade back again, which – I actually told Murph this. I believe I put this out there that I fully expected the Giants to trade back for more day two and day three picks. You got to fill out a roster. If I could get more fourth round, fifth round picks, I'd rather take more hits or shots there than in the sixth and seventh round. So the Giants moved back from 36 to 43. That's not a lot. And they picked up two additional picks to do so. I mean, I don't hate the move at all. So now, whatever. The Giants traded back with Atlanta. They came up. They got Ebikidi. So now the Giants are on the board at 43. So Murph talked about this. So they passed on John Mechie, David Ojabo. Jaquan Brisker was another one if you were looking for a safety at that time. I don't think there's really, honestly, a whole lot outside of that. George Pickens, if you want to ignore a lot of the concerns that people had about him. Now, if you wanted to look at more of the interior offensive line, guys like Cam Jurgens was still there. Jamari Saylor ended up falling quite a bit, huge. Sky Moore, if you want to look at a wide receiver there too. Now, personally, what I would have preferred to see them do at 43, I want to trade McBride.
Yes. Agree with you 100%. That's what I felt one of the picks should have been in consideration. I was really surprised that they didn't draft him.
I agree, but like not to skip ahead here, but I like Bellinger. I'm happy with Bellinger.
Yeah, no, I mean we'll get to that too, but I mean let's
see. I would have liked to see us maybe take a Sky Moore. I know because he's gonna spread the field for you. I knew we weren't gonna touch Pickens.
Sky Moore's another guy that was size wise.
Jaquan Brisker probably would have been nice if we had went that route. But, you know, if we had wanted a wide receiver, I would have just taken Christian Watson, you know, or they traded up in front of us, right? We traded with the Jets. Yeah. Never mind. He went right before us. But
Green Bay selected.
I probably would have went Brisker here, honestly, man.
Personally, I want a guy like Trey McBride. Now, look, DeWandell Robinson, again, I knew who he was because, as Murph alluded to, our boy Brendan, who watches a lot of college football, really put us onto him earlier in the year. And he actually said, hey, this is a guy that I think that the Giants should target. This guy's tough. Yeah, despite his size, he can really move. He's elusive. And what I really think – the reason why people were upset with the picks is because it doesn't feel like it was BPA. So it doesn't feel like it was best player available. And then the problem is when you don't go best player available, then you're kind of trying to find pieces that fit your system. But you know who can go best player available? Teams like the Ravens, who can overdraft positions because – they don't need them because they're a perennial playoff-bound team. So the Ravens can draft four linebackers in a row if they want because it allows them to because the Ravens are that good of an organization. By the way, I mean, the Ravens had a hell of a draft. I don't know how they just continue to get players year after year after year. But in terms of Wandale Robinson, here's my opinion on the Wandale Robinson pick. They drafted Evan Neal. They're going to protect Daniel Jones. Now, what happens with Daniel Jones? Now, if you want to make a guy look good, how do you make Daniel Jones look good? You have Daniel Jones throw a five-yard pass to Kadarius Toney or Wandale Robinson and have them take 76 yards. Goes on the stat sheet as a 76-yard completion. It doesn't matter. So, you know what? You got to get the ball into the hands of certain playmakers. Wandale Robinson is a playmaker. Kadarius Toney is a playmaker. Saquon Barkley, playmaker. Now, Kenny Golladay, I think he's a different type. He's a contested catch type of guy. But he has the potential to be a playmaker too. And Murph's been saying this, but he's probably going to see some time in the slot due to his size. Everybody's going to rotate in this offense.
Need horses, bro. Got to have a stable.
Yeah, I'm kind of disappointed that they didn't spend more assets at the wide receiver position, but they went so fast, I don't think it was worth it. They took some shots on the undrafted free agent market, which is fine, but
they're going to clean up the waiver wire, dude.
Yeah, well, they really have. They added a lot of undrafted free agents already, so.
And then they're just going to cut them, and when other teams cut good talent, they're just going to play the waiver.
Yeah.
It's the new age of football.
I mean, we'll see what happens, but that's all I really got for the Wendell Robinson pick. So, CG, why don't you take us over to the next draft picks here?
All right. So, after that pick, we went into the third round. We had Joshua Idzudu, if I'm probably butchering his name. He is a guard from North Carolina. I didn't really do much research on him. I was kind of looking at a couple other prospects like Saylor, but from what I've read, he seems like he was a decent pick, a lot of versatility. When they went down there, I think they were scouting, what was it, Sam Howell was down there. And they were, obviously, they drafted two guards from there, Marcus McKethan, which we'll talk about later on, and Zudu. So I think the Giants were looking to bulk up the interior of their offensive line, something that they're concerned about, obviously, with what's going on with Nick Gates, what's going on, you know, with Feliciano. You don't know what he's going to bring, you know. So I think this was a smart choice, but I don't know if it was another pick that they may have kind of went outside of what was expected. You know, he was a 3-year starter. You know, he's slated to be a left guard. They say that this is according to PFF. They said that his good off quickness, foot speed, length of development to an effective pass blocker. So that's one of the things we're seeing is that we really want to protect Daniel Jones. So we're going to see a lot of guys who were projected to be good pass in the pass blocking. So that's what I have on him. It will be interesting to see how he turns out.
So for me, the only thing interesting about that, two guys that I was really looking at, or actually, three even, If I'm not mistaken, I'm looking back at the draft right now. Yeah, three. So at this point here, if you wanted to go interior guard, there were two players that I thought that were maybe a little bit better at this point were Dylan Parham and Jamari Saylor. Now, if you're going BPA, this is where the N'Kobe Dean slide continued. This is the third round. N'Kobe Dean was a projected first-round pick. I know there was some injury concerns. I think what it ended up being, Murph, a torn pectoral muscle, right?
And knee.
And knee. So, I mean, this is – the third round is maybe where you want to get some value there. So, a guy like N'Kobe Dean still being available, I thought would have been a great selection for the New York Giants. Although I was surprised, though. There were a couple guys that went earlier than expected as well. You got Brian Robinson out of Alabama that went a little early. Jeremy Rucker to the Jets. I thought that was a little bit early for him, too. One of my favorites as well, end up going to the Kansas City Chiefs. Leo Chanel was also available there at that Giants third-round pick. So, this was a little bit of a head-scratcher for me, too. I'm just going to call the guy Zoo because I'm not going to try to even butcher his name. But, and you alluded to the other pick that the Giants got, the other guard out of UNC as well. But
McKesson, yeah.
So the theme here is athleticism for the New York Giants. The Giants want athletic offensive linemen, and it looks like that they're also looking for versatility. So he has filled in at different spots or various spots on the offensive line, which is something that I like, though, personally, because with injuries, you never know what's going to happen. And you definitely don't want your offensive line to go to crap just because you can't, you know, you got to sign somebody off the street. That's how you end up with guys like Billy Price and Bredesen. And, you know, it just – signing street free agents when you need them the most. So, but the athleticism is kind of intriguing. So I think that's something that we need to look forward to for this offense coming up. A lot of zone blocking, it seems like.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of run and gun offense and a lot of RPOs again, because both UNC boys are heavy run blockers. Like most of their tape that I've seen is just all run, which is fine. It was just interesting to me that they went with a guy that's probably a better run blocker than more experienced pass blocker. But obviously, I think they're going to continue to do those RPOs, which Danny obviously eats on. I was looking for maybe Christian Harris here, inside linebacker. He's a guy that can drop into coverage a little bit. He's got good sideline to sideline speed, but Alabama, but. I don't really know much about O-line prospects, honestly. So, you know, I know Bobby Johnson was down at UNC Pro Day running it.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that they took Josh. It makes it interesting that when you think about, like, draft picks and everything, and a lot of the guys that we took went to schools that Joe Shane had been connected to going to, or somebody on the staff had been connected to going to, and, you know, we petted out the door. It's interesting to if the coach has had a huge influence on this draft class, you know. Because I know Joe was at Oregon. Joe was at Cincinnati.
That's exactly what it seems like to me. I mean, we just talked about it. So, you know, in terms of them trying to fit scheme as opposed to taking BPA.
Can I make a comment? This is something I'm worried about, though, if you look at Gettleman and Reese. This is something that they did in the past, is that they focused on certain schools to draft players. You know, obviously during Conklin time, it was Syracuse. You always saw Boston College and Syracuse. And then with Gettleman, I felt like every year there was a Georgia Bulldog coming in. So I'm just really hoping that the Giants, that Shane doesn't go into that same myopic type of view where I'm just going to go to a couple of schools and just focus on a couple of prospects, because that's not going to work out well, because we've already seen that before.
So I would probably disagree with you on two aspects. So one, Joe Shane coming in didn't have a whole lot of time, right? So a lot of their evaluations, they're basing on some of the stuff that they did beforehand. Yeah, they were at the Senior Bowl, and then they went to the Combine. But obviously, you know, you send scouts all throughout the year to scout these players, come back and make assessments. And Joe Shane talked about, you know, the Giants' scouting department needing to be fixed or upgraded. So I think even if he relied a little bit more on what the coaches wanted this year, so that this way they can put the philosophy until he could rebuild the scouting department heading into next year, I don't think that's a bad thing. But the other thing is, too, Joe Shane was responsible for scouting with Buffalo. Giant fans made a big deal out of the fact that he went and saw Malik Willis, what, three times or whatever it was. And Malik Willis slid to the third round. Giants had an opportunity to select him, I think, four times, and they passed on him. So Joe Shane did some scouting prior to coming to the Giants. And you know who else did, too? Brandon Brown. Brandon Brown is another one that certainly had opportunities to do some scouting. So I don't think it was necessarily stuff with blinders on, because Joe Shane is heavily into the analytics and believes in, like, looking at alternatives, not just, you know, the film, et cetera. So it may seem that way this year, and who knows? If it is next year, then we'll notice whether or not there's a trend. But CJ, why don't you talk about Cordell Flott, our second, third-round pick?
All right, so my thought on Flott, Flott's a nice player from LSU, 6'1", 178, you know, decent PFF grade, 81.3, allowed a 51.1 completion percentage, only two touchdowns to one interceptions allowed. So he was a pretty decent player. He's a little bit, in my mind, he's a little bit of a feisty player that's going to be work really well in the man scheme. I think my biggest issue with it, and I wasn't really issue with the player, I think he's going to be fine. I think just you see like N'Kobe Deem going two picks later to the Eagles, and then you saw Leo Chanel going at the end of the round to the Kansas City Chiefs. I think for me, I just, you know, I would have liked to maybe take a little bit of a risk on one of those players, more of a risk on N'Kobe Deem just because of his pedigree. I know you're just concerned about his knee and, you know, his pectoral muscle. But for me, I just worry that this draft, as great as it was in the beginning, if N'Kobe Deem comes out and he's a 15-year starter for the Eagles, we're going to be looking back and that's all people are going to remember. So Flott is going to fit in nicely, I think. It gives us definitely a little bit more insurance, you know, as we're trying to figure out what we're doing with Bradbury.
It's interesting to see if he can be an outside corner. Everything that I've read up about him just kind of seems like unsure. He's put on some weight.
Slot corner, right? You know, that's what he mostly did when he was at LSU.
That's fine. I think we're keeping Bradbury staying.
Yeah, Cordell Flott for me, honestly. It was a little bit of a surprising pick, and I say surprising only because we do these mock drafts, and we did them prior to the season, and Cordell Flott was somebody that was available very late in drafts. I mean, sixth round, seventh round. Now, I mean, I'm not an NFL scout. I'm simply going off of what, you know, these simulators suggest, and a lot of that is user-based as well. So I really don't know enough about Flott to really you know, provide a detailed analysis on him, and neither does Bobby Skinner. But I mean, just looking at him, I would have preferred to target a guy that can play outside as opposed to going after another slot receiver, because I thought that Darnay Holmes did a really damn good job playing in slot. And again, if you were to look at safety, then you have a guy like Julian Love that can also slide in there. Rodarius Williams, there's other guys that can fill in a slot. I didn't see it as a huge need, but apparently the Giants did, because this seems like a need type of pick as opposed to best player available. But yeah, I mean, if he you know, ends up sticking with the Giants, I hope he does. I hope that he is a very good slot cornerback. But he's going to have to put on some weight, though. He's going to have to get over 200 pounds.
Yeah, especially if he's going to be playing on the outside, you know, especially in the wink scheme where he's going to have to press up against receivers who are much bigger than him.
Never mind the tight ends.
I mean, look at George Kittle's and you know, go down the line.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's going to have to bulk up. Absolutely. Let's see here. You have our fourth round picks for us, for, CG?
Yeah, we had Daniel Bellinger, tight end from San Diego State. I was very high on that pick. I actually felt that was one of the stronger picks the Giants made. I think you look at his statistics, PFF grade wasn't great. It was about 64, but you got to look at what he was asked to do. He was more of a jack-of-all-trades type of guy. Guy could go out, make a catch, but also a good blocker, something that we haven't had a tight end for a very long time. He didn't drop the ball. He was one guy, you know, he has only a 4.2 drop percent in his career, which is important. You know, we've seen when Evan Engram, we don't want to deal with that again from a tight end. Totally different player, actually more of a traditional tight end. I think he's a guy who could grow into his position, someone who hopefully can be integrated more and more as the season goes on. But that was definitely a need for the Giants, and I was glad that they were able to snag him up in the fourth round. What do you guys think?
Well, he was also a former basketball player too in high school. So, and it just seems to be a trend where, you know, everybody's looking for these former basketball players ever since Antonio Gates. But yeah, the one thing that I remember reading about him as well is that he was a good blocker, soft hands, could catch a ball well, got good size at 6'5", 253 pounds. You know, I'm going to let Murph talk, do most of the talking here because Murph is in love with him. He's already given him a nickname too, so.
Belly. No, I mean, yeah, like you guys have already covered it, but he's your old school traditional NY tight end. He definitely is a blocker first, obviously, but he's a get up and go get in the end zone kind of guy too, because from the basketball background, I know CG mentioned he had, would you say, he didn't drop any balls, right? Or one drop. I think he only had like 60 receptions, but still. It's really only him and Ricky on the roster, right? And Akins?
Yeah, that's about it. So, I mean, it's definitely room for him to grow.
Yeah. So, I'm excited about him for sure. I was jonesing for a tight end. I was just watching tight ends on Saturday morning before the draft. And he was one of the guys I was watching. So, I was actually pretty excited when we took him. I didn't know anything about him before Saturday, though.
So, next pick.
I know nothing about Dane. Sounds like he's probably going to be more like a special teamer, maybe a gunner, but he also played like money backer. So maybe a candidate to take Jabril's role in that money backer kind of scheme.
Yeah, I mean, they needed.
Thanks. We've been letting CG introduce the picks, but no, go ahead with that.
We got to get rolling.
Sorry, analysis.
No, I mean, Dane Belton, I mean, he's a guy who fits into the Martindale system really well. He's a versatile defender. You can put him pretty much in the slot, the box, or deep. He's definitely needed based on how much, you know, we lost Jabril Preppers. I mean, we basically had, what's his name, who's the quarterback we had out there playing last week, the backup. I forget his name, but, I mean, we needed some safety depth.
And Brian Lewerke.
Yeah, Lewerke, sorry, old man syndrome, but – no, I mean, looking at the situation, I mean, Belton is a guy who's going to come in there and he's going to make some big plays. I mean, he picked up 5 passes in 2021. He's got good range. He's got good speed. He's going to be able to cover pretty much everything, tight ends, backs, and receivers. I don't know if he's going to right away replace a Jabril Preppers, but he's someone who I think over time, if he's utilized well in the Martindale scheme, I think he's going to definitely make some contributions.
You're muted, man.
Is he more of a linebacker or safety?
He seems like a – I mean, based on what I've read, he seems more of like that type of like money backer type player, but a little more versatile. So, I mean
– that alludes to what Murph was saying earlier in terms of him filling more of the Jabril Preppers role.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good, too, because the Giants essentially have then Xavier McKinney now, too. So, it's good. Again – another common theme here amongst the draft picks for the New York Giants, versatility. And we're going to get into that again with the next two picks, Frank. I keep calling you Frank because you look like RoboCop, man.
Frank. He does look like Frank.
He does. Damn it, man.
Oh, my God. You could just start calling me Frank. Jesus Christ.
It's probably easier for me.
I know. Like, we talked about the three syllable. I mean, whatever makes it easier, you can call me anything as long as you don't.
But no, it's just because you look like our buddy Frank, who comes on the podcast from time to time, too. So that's why I keep calling you. But go ahead, though, with the next two picks.
All right. So we have Micah McFadden. He's a linebacker from Indiana. A guy who last season had a little bit of a step back. He probably would have been a little bit more up the board. I mean, he had 74.8 PFF grade last year. I mean, 2020, 85.8. So he had half the snaps in 2020. You're looking at a guy who's a real hard-nosed linebacker, someone who's going to be used in blitz, heavy blitz schemes, something that, you know, Wink likes to do. He's quick enough to get around the screens, I think, and enough speed to beat the block, different types of blocking schemes. So I think he'll be utilized by Wink in a lot of different ways. I think the one thing with him is that he's got a really short wingspan. So he might have a little bit of difficulty against some elite blockers, but I mean, he's a guy that I'd be interested to see how he develops.
Or if anything, I don't know.
I don't know anything about him. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, so I think CG covered a lot of the analysis on McFadden too. I mean, we're probably jumping a little bit ahead, but between him and Darian Beavers, I mean, there's a lot of, again, there's that word, versatility with our linebacking crew. So between Micah McFadden, who I actually came to know by looking at mock drafts and doing mock drafts last year. But yeah, McFadden and Beavers are two guys that certainly add versatility to that defense. Whether or not, does that mean Tate Crowder's job is safe? I don't know, right? They tend to be a little more athletic than Tate Crowder, probably more versatile than Tate Crowder as well. So we'll see what happens. But, like you said, you know, he's instinctive. Read him misdirection screen. So he's a linebacker that can work out in space. And same thing with Beavers too, in terms of his coverage skills. But DJ Davidson, CJ.
Okay. So you obviously, the Giants had a major need in the interior defensive line. You know, they have been kind of, they struggled a little bit last year there. They lost Austin Johnson this past free agents cycle. So they needed to fill a need there. Davidson is a guy who's got the size and the upper body strength. I mean, he's going to be someone who has the ability to get off blocks and make plays, you know, against the run. He's a guy who's probably going to need a little bit of seasoning. You're not going to get much of a pass rush from him, but he's more of a people eater, you know. So Leonard Williams and Thibodeau and Aziz are going to be able to get, you know, to the quarterback. So the Giants really needed to have someone who could fill up some space. You know, you like those big balls of fat, you know, on the defensive line. And I think he's going to be able to go in there and make some space.
We need a space eater. That's for sure. I'm missing that because Dexter is not that, which has been a hot topic going around. I don't know if I want to go down that rabbit hole, but good. Sounds good. Sounds cool. Like he's a guy that we need to plug that middle because, you know, Wink wants his alpha.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his scheme, the Wink scheme, you usually have a good big solid body in the middle because it's very dependent on blitz. So, I mean, I think that's going to be his role per se. But I'll shoot through some of these picks, you guys. Let me know if you have any opinions on them. You know, Marcus McKethan, we talked a little bit early, North Carolina, our offensive guards. He's more of a guard. He's a big guy, another big guy. He has good length and likes to stay in front of his assignments. Doesn't have the same type of foot speed that EZ has, but he's someone who definitely, as we look to remake the offensive line, especially in the interior, is someone who could develop into a good role player who can come in and in a pinch if need be. And then
well, I think that's the main thing between him and Zoo, is that he's going to be more of a developmental piece than Zoo is. Zoo will be expected to contribute possibly right away. So
yeah, and I think that's something, you know, the Giants have not been able to do. And I really hope that they could start developing some of these interior offensive linemen, because it's going to help going forward. So, and then we go into the sixth round, and this, we talked a little bit about him before, Darian Beavers. And before I talk about him, I want to talk a little bit about the Buffalo Bills, because I felt like the Buffalo Bills in two instances jumped the Giants. James Cook, which I, you know, was the running back from Georgia who was targeted to go to the Giants. He went a couple of picks earlier. I think it was in the third round, the beginning of the third round. And then it was also the god of the punt god, I think he is, the god of the punt god, who was taken literally, Matt Arizada. He was taken two picks before the Beavers pick, which the Beavers pick turned out to be a really good one. You know, a lot of people say was probably the steal of the draft for the Giants. The guy was projected to go in the fourth round, who the Giants wound up getting at 182, you know, big board rank on PFF of 127. Pretty consistent PFF numbers in college, about 77.7 last season. He's got a good long frame, ideal stature for, you know, a linebacker position. He can get to through a different moves to get past blocks. He's also one of the best stock shed linebackers in the class. This is all PFF analysis for whatever you want to say. But to simplify it, the Giants need some good linebackers. You can't be relying on Blake Martinez based on his injury history. And Tate Crowder was a really nice story for being Mr. Irrelevant, but Tate Crowder isn't the only answer we should have at linebacker. So I think Beavers was a steal. You know, and I think hopefully he develops into a good role player in the defense, someone who's going to be versatile. So,
from what I understand, he's more of a downhill guy. That is not a guy that's really going to drop in the covers, like you said. And that's still, in my opinion, something we lack. Maybe what is his name? Belton. Belton can play there, but still don't really have a coverage linebacker. You know, because Beavers is a guy that came off the edge a little bit, if I'm not mistaken, as well.
A lot of pass rushers. Yeah, I mean,
definitely a lot, pass rush.
Something, you know, obviously with Lorenzo Carter was utilized at times as that type of role. I mean, the Giants are trying to have that ability to get more at the quarterback, obviously, from that second level. So, I don't know. I'm curious to see, you know, based on these draft picks and some of the remaining players that are still there, you know, we talk about Ellerson Smith and, you know, like even a Ximenez, if they decide to hold on to him. I want to see, and then Quincy Roche. I mean, there's a bunch of players I want to see how they fit into this new system. What do you guys think?
Quincy Roche, I like a lot, but I agree. We talked about the depth on the defensive line. I think that just seemed, you know, is really going to be set. It's the secondary that scares me. It really does. So,
secondary in the middle linebacker.
Yeah, well, I'm still in favor again. I mean, depending upon the Giants don't have a pot to piss in right now, but I mean, I'm still in favor of bringing back Jalen Smith if he's still available as the Giants work through their roster. I like Jalen Smith. I think he would fill that second middle linebacker role very nicely. And then, yeah, you kind of figure out who your strong and weak side linebackers are. But, yeah, Aziz is probably penciled in as a starter. So is Kayvon, Leo, Dexter, and then I guess Justin Ellis on that front. So
yeah,
we'll see.
I don't know. I mean, I think they're definitely expecting Xavier McKinney to play a huge role, because we lack a lot of coverage in the middle of the field, looking at the defense right now.
I think Julian Love's going to play all over the field, too.
And that's cool, too. I think he will. He's going to work his dick off. He's not going to be pretty all the time, but he's going to work 110% all the time. But yeah, well, I do think, like, they're going to have to mold this defense around McKinney to
Well, you brought up a good point about moving Belton around. So in order to do that, I mean, Julian Love is going to have to, you know, play various positions at points.
I'm just a little worried about the back end of the defense. It's a little thin for my liking. I mean, if God forbid something happens to Xavier McKinney, we're really going to be in trouble. So hopefully we can develop some of these draft picks. And, you know, there's always a lot of people you can pick up after this point, after the draft. So there may be some maneuvering through the waiver wire or, you know, undrafted free agents, because I still am a little worried about the back end.
It's all more reason not to cut Bradbury, man.
Real quickly, are there any undrafted free agents that you guys are excited about, Murph? I know
everybody's like excited about the Florida State running back. I'm not gonna lie to you guys, I haven't really watched anybody but the top three picks. But no, not really. The running back apparently is exciting. I did watch a little bit of him. He looks like he trucks some guys and he can catch the ball a little bit, but I don't know why he went undrafted. I have no idea. But other than that, I know they stacked the wide receiver room, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, they've made some moves to try to at least give you some more options if someone gets hurt. You know, what we've seen the last couple of seasons. I still think they're going to do something with Slayton. I don't think he's going to be on the roster, but then again, who knows?
Well, let's just run down real quick who the Giants have so far in the undrafted free agent. They brought in Darren Evans, cornerback, LSU, so Flott's teammate there. Jeremiah Hall, tight end, Oklahoma. They brought in Tyrone Truesdale, defensive tackle, Florida. Jabari Ellis, defensive lineman, South Carolina. It's a good name, Murph. I know you didn't mention him, but our boy Shane loves him. Christopher Hinton, defensive lineman, Michigan. Austin Allen, tight end, Nebraska. So they did bring in two additional tight ends. Yusef Corker, DB, Kentucky. Josh Rivers, interior offensive lineman, Kansas State. Tomon Fox, linebacker edge, North Carolina. And Jashawn Corbin, running back, Florida State. Trenton Thompson, safety, San Diego State. And Zion Gilbert, cornerback, Florida Atlantic.
You can see basically looking at that list that, you know, you see a theme, and it's the areas there I think they're concerned about, you know, interior defensive line, you know, safety, cornerback, a tight end. I mean, I think they're what, you know, my biggest concern though is, you know, they didn't really address the running back. And I know we have Saquon, and I know I don't know. I would have liked to see them do maybe a little bit more there.
Well, who we got? We got Saquon, we got Antonio Williams,
Breida, Matt Breida. Yeah.
There's one more, isn't there?
Who's the guy? Brightwell, but Gary Brightwell.
Saquon.
I guess it was just Breida that we signed.
Yeah, I think there's like four of them before the draft.
Yeah, I think it's going to be similar to Joe Judge, where we are constantly playing the waiver wire. I think that's also another reason why they're trying to stack up on undrafted free agents to see if they can get any cheap deals out of it. But they'll just cut those guys and play the waiver wire out later on when people cut people. Fill those CBC Sandro slots. Platzgummer. I thought they re-signed him. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's the developmental.
Yeah.
Yep.
But hopefully, you know, Joe plays the waiver, because that was something I liked that Judge did. He played the waiver wire a lot. I do think that you can constantly overturn the bottom of your roster.
So what would you guys?
I'm just looking at the roster here too. There's a lot of names that I really don't remember too. So I'm looking at the left tackle position, Devery Hamilton. Obviously, we got Max Garcia, Jameel Douglas, who was out of Washington. Obviously, Mark Lewinsky. So some free agents here too. And then I'm gonna butcher the name, but that guy Roy that we signed from the program with OCU Manure,
the Nigerian guy.
Yeah. So,
what do you think about the draft overall? Would you guys rate it if you were going to give it a letter grade?
I'll probably go with a B or B minus. Only because, again, I do believe in going best player available. Unless all things are equal, then, you know, need be in the tiebreaker. And I just feel like the Giants didn't do that enough this draft. I feel like they reached for a lot of positions. But, look, I'm not a scout. I'm not in the Giants war room. So I'm just have to trust that they know more than I do.
I agree with you on that. And, you know, I took a little flack on Twitter because I said that day two was a disaster, which in my mind I felt it was. But honestly, I can't give it more than a B, probably, if I was going to say B minus B like you. I mean, I'm not an expert. I'll be the first to say I know a lot about football. I've been following it for over 30 years. But and I've seen players come and go. I've seen situations like this before where the Giants passed on players and it would haunt us in the future. And that's, for me, like you said, I just want to make sure the Giants get the best players they can get. And they're not reaching for players just to fit specific roles. Because at the end of the day, you want the best football player that you can put on the field. And, you know, we'll have to see how it goes. We'll have to see how things go, I guess, in the next year or two. Because it really takes 2 to 3 years to know how a draft class turns out. So I'm excited to see what happens. But also I'm a little bit, like, guarded because – I'm not going to hand Shane the keys to the truck, per se. I'm going to give it some time to see how it turns out.
I mean, we nailed our first round like we wanted to, and like you guys obviously figured out during that session. I don't know many of the guys, so like you guys said, I'm going to let it play out. I'm not getting my hopes up for this year, but I do expect them to win games. I do expect them to be competitive. This is a league that you're not going to just like slouch over. So obviously to me, the roster is not complete, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with the rest of the guys clearing cap space. It looks like right now we have about $6 million, which is more than I thought we had, interestingly enough. But, cause I think a draft class is about 10, right?
Yeah, they're going to have to clear some money soon. So we will see some moves, I think, in the next 2 weeks, I would imagine. Because they got to sign the draft class, all those draft picks, and then, you know, you're going to want to do some maneuvers. You know, other teams are going to be releasing players. So you're going to want to have a little money to play with.
That's true. And Joe, we trust.
Yep. I heard that before. In Reese we trust, and Dave we trust. Hopefully this time, third time's a charm.
I was trying to see if I could find what the contracts were. They already have them on the roster. They don't even have it separated as
they haven't signed them yet, but I think there's a standard rookie pay scale based on the
it just comes down to this can't be right. They got Kayvon Thibodeau at like $705,000 over the cap. So that's not even close to what he's going to get. I believe that the first two picks, I believe they were over like $6 million each. So I could be wrong, but I think you need $12 million just for the first two picks.
I was here. Yeah, that's why I think, you know, there's those players like Gates and Jimenez and, you know, possibly Slayton. There's going to be some people who are going to get cut, you know, just to open up some salary. And I don't see how they can cut Bradbury. They might have to eat it and restructure it. You know, I know they don't want to do that, but I think Bradbury at this point is too much of a valuable piece for them to just get rid of, but I could be totally wrong.
Yeah, I just pulled Patricia Trina had said not too long ago, back on April 30th, per over the cap, the Giants need $12.6 million to fit their rookie class under the top 51. So.
Some moves are coming.
Yeah, so we'll see. Any closing remark, boys?
Just great to do this again with you guys. Thanks. It was a fun weekend. Enjoy talking about this with you guys, and look forward to see what happens next.
Absolutely. Well, rookie mini camps, I believe May 14th, if I'm not mistaken. So that's it. That's the next thing that we have to look forward to. What about you, Murphy? Any closing remarks?
Nope. I will be looking forward to that as well. That's no pretty one gives sad, but well, go Rangers. That's actually my closing remark.
All right. That's going to wrap up this episode of Clapback Sports. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Peace and love, everyone.